Good morning, Steve Dale here on WGN Radio with very exciting news. If you have listened to me for a while, and yes, I've been at this radio station more than a while, I for years now have been talking about why we should never declaw our cats. Now, the American Association of Feline Practitioners, and this is news, friends, have said cat-friendly practices, practices, veterinary practices that have gone through, jumped through hoops to certify as cat-friendly can no longer declaw. And I've been wondering, okay, how can you say you're cat-friendly if you're cutting off the claws of these cats? So the president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners, board-certified feline veterinarian, Dr. Kelly St. Dennis is here to explain all that. First of all, from my perspective, Dr. St. Dennis, congratulations. I think this is the best and the right thing to do and a humane thing to do for cats. So my first words are just that. Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. We're very excited about this change coming up as well.
Now, I think we have to start here for those who don't know, starting at Claw one, what is a declaw? Let's define our terms.
So essentially, a declaw is done to reduce the damage that cats can cause to homes or people from their claws, but the surgical procedure itself is technically amputation or removal of the far part of each finger or digit, as we call it in a cat's case. So from your last knuckle where your nail bed is down would be like having the finger cut off from that knuckle down. So that's what we're doing when we perform a declaw surgery.
But people say, oh, well, if you use this technique or that technique, it's not so bad to my understanding. No matter how you cut it, literally, it's still an amputation.
Yes. It is still an amputation, and it doesn't matter what techniques you use. You're still needing to sever soft tissue and nerves, most importantly, which cause most of the long-term issues that we're starting to see. And in some cases, bone gets cut, and some pieces of bone may be left behind, which also increase the risk of problems. So it really doesn't matter if you're using a laser declaw or a scalpel or scissors, as many veterinarians have different practices. Those things are all still cutting tissue.
Now, some number of years ago, I would talk about declaw, express my concerns, and people would, veterinarians even, would come on the radio and say, well, you know, the studies show, and they were right, the studies at that time, and I'm going back 20 years or more, but the initial studies showed that there really is no damage that's being done to these cats. They, at least after the first few days, they recover. They're not in pain anymore. They don't have any additional behavior problems. Now, that happened up to about, I use the year 2000 as the cutoff point, you know, but that's approximate. It's 1999, 1998, 2001, 2002, but in that area. Then the studies began to change what they were saying. And study after study after study, including many studies, published peer-reviewed studies, out over the past several years, have indicated, whoa, there's all sorts of damage that's being done. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, sure. And I think part of the initial, you know, that comment that, that they don't seem to be having an issue with post-operative and there's no pain, it had more to do with our inability to assess a cat's pain. As we all know, cats are great at hiding illness and pain. So just even trying to scientifically assess how painful cats were immediately after a declaw and in the days following a declaw down to later on years is really difficult to begin with. But we're starting to see more studies accumulate, as you've noted, where we're seeing medical problems but also chronic pain. And I think that's the big black box that really scares me more than anything, is that the chronic pain is hard to detect in these cats. You know, we may start to see things like changes in their litter box behavior. They're avoiding the litter box because their paws hurt. Some cats are irritable, suffering from chronic pain, so they may bite. And we do have some studies that have shown that these things are increased at risk when cats have been declawed. And they may even have things like back pain. And one of the big black boxes that I often discuss when I'm doing my lectures is the fact that we don't understand amputee pain in our cats. We have very good data in human medicine and even in dogs with tail docking to show postoperative amputee pain that can occur as long as 10 years after the fact. And as we said at the beginning of your show, this is an amputation. We are cutting nerves. We are disturbing nerves anatomically, so impacting how they are, and that can lead to long-term problems that may not occur right away. So we don't know how these cats are reacting to that type of pain and what's impacting them and then how they deal with it over time.
I want to talk about that. I was going to bring that up, so thank you for doing so.
Yeah.
And I want to make even more of a point of this. So we know from human medicine that phantom pain, as it's sometimes called, of amputees who have come back from war, that sort of thing, or maybe have had an auto accident or are diabetic, whatever the reason is, in humans,
yes,
have phantom pain, as it's called. And years ago, apparently, I'm told that was thought to be only a psychological thing. How can you be in pain if the limb isn't there anymore? But it turns out it isn't only a psychological thing. And now doctors certainly understand that and treat that, often with a variety of different medications that are available for humans. Well, if we're wired, we can't ask the cats, but if we're wired the same way as cats are, and today we know we are, why wouldn't a cat feel phantom pain as well?
Well, and that's the difficult question to answer. And I think we all can assume the answer is yes, they will. Some of them are going to experience amputee or phantom limb pain, and then other phenomenon like stump pain in their amputee sites. And the question always is, who's going to develop those types of pain? Because even in human medicine, we know that not everybody develops that. It's a fairly high incidence. It depends on the type of surgery. But we don't know and we can't predict who or when. And so if we look at cats who hide their pain so creatively and we really don't know when they're not feeling well or feeling pain, and we don't know who of those DQuad patients are going to eventually develop these problems, that's just, like I said, a very big black box that I just feel that we shouldn't be going into.
You know, we only have a short time left in this particular segment. And then when we come back after the break, what I want to talk to you about is behavior modification so the cats don't scratch in all the wrong places, because more and more we're seeing no declaw happen. But that is this. You know, I thought it would be a good idea. Dr. Robin Downing, I'm sure you know of her, is one of the planet's experts on pain management in our companion animals. And I thought, I wonder if she could look at a cat that even you, but a feline specialist, probably not you, but most veterinarians could look at and say, that cat is, the gait is normal. And she can say, well, maybe not. And I think that cat's been declawed. It turns out I'm right. She could look at a cat and say, well, everybody else says, oh, that cat's walking normally. And she says, no, it's not. And I bet that cat is declawed. Its gait is off. And we also know that if your gait is off, human being, dog, or cat, over a period of time, there are going to be consequences.
Yes.
Can you comment
Absolutely.
On that?
Yeah, well, I agree with her 100%. I mean, we do know that cats tend to carry more of their, a certain percentage more of their weight on their forelimbs, so that when we remove the ends of those digits in a declaw, they do have to shift their weight back. And so we start to see these data collected, like in the one publication where we have an increased risk of back pain, for example, probably because those cats are shifting their body weight in an abnormal way.
All right. Well, when we come back, I want to talk about behavior modification and what to do to prevent our cats in the first place of scratching at all the wrong places. More about all of that from the president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners. And what the heck is that organization? We'll find out. Dr. Kelly St. Denis is here, and she'll be here when we come back on WGN. Dr. Kelly St. Denis is the president of the American Association of Feline Practitioners. She's a feline specialist. Dr. St. Denis, this is great news to be a cat-friendly practice, which is important, friends. If you're not happy with the way your cat is being treated or respected at your veterinary clinic today, seek out a cat-friendly practice. Catvets.com, by the way, is the website for that. Dr. St. Denis, what is the American Association of Feline Practitioners?
So the American Association of Feline Practitioners is a group of practitioners who got together several decades ago and decided that we needed to support each other and look at ways to improve our practice with feline medicine. And over the years, we've grown. And we have a board of directors and an executive committee that sits and meets several times a year. And we work towards, you know, improving our mission and our vision statement, where we are trying to improve the health and welfare of cats through high standards of practice, through continuing education and evidence-based medicine.
And that's greatly where the cat-friendly practices come in. Can you explain what they are?
Yes. Yeah, so the cat-friendly practices, a part of the American Association of Feline Practitioners, is an extra set of criteria that a clinic can set in their practice. It is partly about how the cat is treated and handled with gentleness and some consideration for the cat's emotions when they come into the practice, but it is also about the standard of care that that clinic provides, not just at the front when the owner is there with the cat, but also when there is surgery being performed and what type of medications we use for pain management, and how, even down to how we house our patients and the care that they're given when they're staying with us.
Now, we were talking about how you cannot be a cat-friendly practice any longer, and as a veterinarian, continue to declaw if you're in that practice. That is ending this year, which I think is a wonderful thing. You know, and we talked about the detriments of declaw, or at least we touched on it. There's much more to talk about. One thing we didn't mention is that the Centers for Disease Control is actually opposed to the idea because they say that a cat that is declawed is more likely to bite, and they're more concerned about biting cats than scratching cats. In addition to that, several nations, many nations on the planet, and most provinces in Canada, incidentally, have banned declaw. In the United States, New York State did that in 2019. And I know if it wasn't for the pandemic, because I know other states are looking at the same thing, and, you know, the pandemic has distracted legislation and slowed things down. But ultimately, other states probably will. In addition to that, lots of cities in California, Denver, Colorado, have absolutely banned declaw. There's a reason for all that. However, people say, I don't want my cat scratching my things. So what do you say to that as a veterinarian when people say that to you, Dr. St. Denis?
I usually try to work with the client when they are concerned about scratching, about where the cat is scratching. So, you know, from the moment that you bring a cat into your home, they aren't necessarily by default going to start scratching your belongings or ruining your items in your house. But if they are scratching things that you don't want them to scratch, I try to work with clients to find out why they're scratching that particular item. So we've put together a whole program called Claw Counseling.
I love that.
It's in our toolkit. So we have a toolkit on our website, and it really helps the clinician and the cat owner to go through the steps of why is the cat scratching, let's say, the couch. And I myself have lived with clawed cats, and you know they start to scratch a particular item, and I look at what's going on. That's near the front door. There's a stray cat spraying outside. The cat's protecting its territory. So we always have to go back to, first of all, why do cats scratch? And is that related to why they're scratching my couch or my curtains or the wall by the stairwell? And so we always have to try and look at why the cat is scratching that area, because if we can figure that out, we can usually deal with whatever the cause is and stop scratching.
Why do cats scratch?
So there's a number of reasons that they do. Probably the number one would be to mark territory. So they're doing that marking both physically, they're obviously leaving a physical sign that they've been there, they're marking their territory, but they also leave pheromones in that spot to show again that they've marked their territory. They will also scratch when they've woken up from a sleep, but they're usually doing that to get a good stretch on so they can stretch out their limbs when they've been sleeping. And they also do it to dislodge the old claw surface so that the new sharp claw surface can be exposed underneath. So there's a number of reasons that they do these things, and we have lots of things that we can provide them with that they can scratch that don't fall under the category of our belongings.
Well, of course, scratching post, vertical post would be at the top of the list. Mm-hmm. The second on the list, probably horizontal post. Does placement of the post matter, and the kind of post that you purchase?
There's a lot of different thoughts about that, and we have some really good data from some behaviorists who have looked at different households and what is preferred by cats. You know, do they like carpet? Do they like rope? As you said, do they like the scratch post or something that's flat on the floor or slightly angled? And the idea really with most cats is to set these surfaces all over the house and use different surfaces and get to know your individual cat. What did they like? Where do they like to have that? You know, is it a preferred a tall, solid surface versus something that's on the floor? So they will have preferences, and then they will have preferences, like you said, about where it is. So maybe it needs to be by the front door where there are stray cats walking around and they feel the need to assert their territorial marking.
So a yes or no question here. So you have a cat that's been scratching 2 years, 5 years, 6 years, whatever that number is. Can you teach an old cat new things? Can you convert this cat to scratch where you want the cat to scratch instead of at the stereo speakers or the sofa?
If we take the time to figure out what it is about that particular item or the location of that item or both that is making the cat scratch it, then yeah, we can change the behaviors.
And there are lots of tools available that even weren't available a couple of years ago. A pheromone product called FeelAway can help understanding the situation in the household between the cats. So if you really want to do something about this, the other thing you can do, there are certified feline behavior consultants out there. There are veterinary behaviorists. There are technicians that are also certified in behavior, all of which can help as well. And the website, again, from the American Association of Feline Practitioners for that claw toolkit is?
Catvets.com.
Catvets.com. Dr. Kelly St. Denis, congratulations once again, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve.
This is WGN Radio, and I don't usually read news stories. We have the best newsroom among radio stations in America that can do that, that does that, right? Live news 24/7. However, I've got a news story here, so I'm about to break a rule. You ready? A cat burglar is responsible for a crime wave. The burglar in Ipswich, England, has been swiping pens, children's books, artwork, and sock puppets. Even condoms. Cameras caught the thief in the act, and neighborhood children have also witnessed this brazen criminal who turned out to be a 3-year-old Siamese cross cat. Yeah, this truly is a cat burglar. Theo the cat had reportedly gained the trust of those neighborhood children who have opened doors for him in their homes and say, "Kitty, come on in." And then Kitty takes stuff. The problem is that Theo the cat made off recently with an iPad. And some neighbors said, well, enough's enough. Theo's dad does take pictures of all those items that have been stolen and sends them out to the neighborhood, and people do knock on his door retrieving those items. You know, personally, I'm not so worried about the kleptomaniac kitty, but more concerned about the family with sock puppets. Speaking of cats, and we will speak of cold weather next week on the show, Dr. Susan Ferraro, a Chicago veterinarian and past president of the Chicago Veterinary Medical Association, will be here to talk about how to keep our pets, dogs and cats, safe in the winter. One thing that I want to talk about is what Tony Orlando sang about. Knock 3 times on the car hood. That was really what the song was supposed to be about, right? I think so, because when it gets really cold outside, or as the weather changes and it gets even colder than it's been outside, cats find that comfort area under a car hood to be almost like an electric blanket, you know, so they slink underneath there and it's nice and cozy and warm. They're protected from their perspective, right, from predators. However, then someone goes unknowingly to start their car and mangles a kitty. That can even happen and does happen in garages with owned cats. So your cat, presumably, if you allow the cat outside or into the garage, you have a warm car, it feels comfortable and cozy, cat goes under there. So knock 3 times on the car hood in the morning. Next week, we'll also talk about bats. You heard me right, bats and the human-animal bond. That's next week, bright and early, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN.